District Attorney Mike Ramsey has declared that Chico police officers were justified in the October 14th shooting of Stephen Vest in the parking lot of Chico's Petco store. Ramsey released that declaration and the findings of a multi-agency Butte County officer-involved shooting critical incident protocol team this morning, January 14th. A press conference detailing the events of the night Vest 30 was shot dead by Sergeant Nicholas Bauer and Officer Tyler Johnson was broadcast live to social media. Ramsey's findings were presented in a 26-page document addressed to Chico Police Department Chief Matt Madden. Part of the executive summary of the document reads, "The investigation was wide-ranging and included interviews with civilian witnesses in the area and with the involved officers, the CPD dispatch tapes of the incident, forensic analysis of the crime scene, forensic analysis of the various body cameras, and autopsy and toxicology results, which showed an extremely high level of methamphetamine in Vest's blood at the time of his death." DA Ramsey has overseen the investigations of more than two dozen officer-involved shootings in the county since assuming the role of district attorney in 1987, and has declared all but one of the officers justified in their actions. The lone exception is former Paradise Police Officer Patrick Feaster, who was found guilty of involuntary manslaughter after shooting 26-year-old Andrew Thomas in November of 2015. Feaster was released after serving half of a 180-day sentence in the Lassen County Jail in Susanville. Butte County Public Health has begun releasing COVID-19 vaccines to high-risk groups in phases and tiers based on government guidelines. Groups that have already been offered vaccinations include frontline health care providers and teachers and other educators. The vaccines are being offered at this time by invitation only. Once a group is eligible, public health will reach out via places of employment and health care providers. Butte County Public Health is also encouraging individuals and businesses to register with the office to help facilitate notification. Visit the website at buttecounty.net/public-health to register. Note, you can only register to be notified, not to schedule an appointment. It's estimated that the vaccine will be available for the general public by this June or July via local pharmacies, primary care providers, and community vaccination clinics. The North Valley Community Foundation is offering tangible thanks to those who help others. Via its COVID-19 Employee Care Grant Program, the North Valley Community Foundation will give out awards between $100 and $5,000, depending on staff size, to nonprofits that serve at-risk populations and residential care facilities in Butte, Glen, Tehama, and Coosa counties, so that they can treat their employees with self-care initiatives or gestures. "We are always looking for ways to help the helpers, and those helpers have never been more heroic than during this pandemic," said NVCF President and CEO Alexa Benson-Valvanis. The foundation suggests rewards such as staff appreciation events on Zoom, a delivered meal, virtual yoga or exercise classes, group meditation sessions, exercise equipment, gratitude gifts, and other self-care ideas. The application period ends tomorrow, January 15th. Submit your proposals online at nvcf.org. Second step is hard to take. Lid your traps, forgot the fate. Now these words, now the means, it's worth as much a hill. For those of you just joining us, you're listening to the Chico News and Review Show on KZFR, 90.1 FM and KZFR.org. The biggest local story by far this week has been the sweep of homeless encampments on Tuesday morning. After weeks of uncertainty and months of heated public debate, the city of Chico made good on pledges to step up enforcement against campers that morning, as dozens of city workers and Chico Police Department personnel broke up encampments in Lower Bidwell Park. The camps have been growing in local parks and along waterways since March. The previous city council had relaxed rules against public camping to comply with U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention's guidelines aimed at aiding social distancing to curb the spread of COVID-19 among vulnerable populations. Cut to December 1st, when the new city council, which flipped to a conservative majority in November, made good on campaign promises to clear out the camps and passed an urgency ordinance that elevated the breaking of park rules to criminal offenses, setting the stage for Tuesday's sweeps. Ken Smith has been covering this story since the beginning, and he was in the park as the heavy equipment and the police arrived. He joins us now.
Hey there, Ken.
Hey, what's up, Jason?
Well, what a dramatic day for Chico, man. Can you walk us through the scene in Lower Park that morning?
Yeah, man, it was definitely pretty crazy. I got there maybe a quarter to eight, or a few minutes before eight, and there was already probably 50 people gathered right there near the entrance of the park to protest the action that would take place shortly. So I spoke to some protesters and then walked down into the park to talk to some campers who were packing up. That the question from everyone, protesters, campers, public, seems to be, where do we go? And, you know, so...
So you, when you were there, like, what was going on exactly? What actions were being taken?
Well, at that point, I think people were just kind of questioning when and if, you know, police and city officials would arrive to start. And I didn't have time before I was interviewing protesters to kind of scout around a little bit more, but as I was down in the encampment, I saw a number of the protesters moving further, deeper into the park, over to the 1 mile area. So followed along, and by the time I got there, there was it was chaotic but controlled. I mean, there was nobody was out of control, and I didn't see any really negative interactions between police and either campers or protesters, but there was a number of city vehicles staged at the parking lot at 1 mile on the south side by the horseshoe pits.
Yeah.
And for the duration that I was there, most of the efforts were focused on the horseshoe pits, where there's been large encampment for a while. Actually followed a loader, a big Caterpillar tractor, down the hill, which just kind of very, again, chaotic. It's maneuvering around a big group of protesters who were in turn circling around Sergeant Cesar Sandoval from the Chico Police Department, who's the head of the target team, who's the main folks who interact with the homeless in Chico.
And what exactly were they doing with the heavy equipment? Are they throwing stuff away?
Yeah, there was also in the bushes, everywhere you looked, and at the tents, were just swarmed with city workers, just collecting anything they saw, throwing it into trash cans, dumping it into large piles, which the loader in turn came through and kind of scooped up. It was a really dramatic thing. I don't know that to what I didn't get a chance to observe police and see to what extent people were allowed to grab their belongings.
Sure.
I know from information that I got from the police from the city after the fact that police were had orders to store people's belongings for 30 or 60 days. I don't remember what, but I didn't see any of that going on. There was definitely things in those piles which were obviously people's belongings. I mean, it wasn't just trash and clutter. Some of it was, but and as you know, people who are familiar with the camps will say, like, unless you're familiar with that, sometimes it's hard to tell the difference to outsiders, you know, what people consider important and what people don't. So
And the campers had received notice, like a week or so ahead of time that this was imminent?
Yeah, on Thursday, it was a 72-hour notice, so which would have actually expired, depending on what time of the day. Certain people got them, I think, either Sunday or Monday. So that was kind of another part of the story that I wrote, and I mean, I've been following this for weeks, and it seems like weekly I'm sending the same questions to police and city staff about when is this going to happen? What's it going to look like? How's it going to happen? It's all been very vague up until now, which also reading my story, you'll see that was a complaint by council member Alex Brown, that even they're being left out of the loop of what these things will look like. Well, now that we know what it's going to look like, I think we'll be seeing this more in the next couple of weeks. Sergeant Sandoval wasn't able to answer questions directly from the press, but from what I gleaned from his conversations with other people, and he did actually confirm for me that they're going to focus on that area for the next week, possibly 2 weeks, before they notice and then sweep into another area. So
is there, when you were witnessing everything go down, and I know there were protesters there that were from local service providers, were there people there helping the campers as well?
Yeah, a lot of the protesters actually, and I mean, other people there were definitely walking around camps offering help moving pretty much prior to the, you know, the actual action. I don't know. Really, it was chaotic. I could only keep my eye on one thing. I'm not sure to what extent people were helping campers, but I did see that happening earlier. And in various videos posted now to social media, you see people doing that for sure.
You mentioned, talking to different people there, including Bryce. We're going to play a clip here from him as he was loading up his belongings.
Where are you planning on going?
You know, I found a place right on the edge of town, and it's going to be a difficult move. I've been in and out of the hospital for the last few months, about 6 or 7 times. So just physically being able to get myself up and going to be able to move out there has been difficult, especially since... this location right here, they actually told us to move here about 3 months ago from where we were staying elsewhere around this whole area. They pretty much corralled us right into this little area, and they told us to either come here or leave the city limits. And now with the new city council, they're telling us we literally have to leave the city limits.
It's been widely reported that the local service providers aren't able to accommodate hardly any, if any, new clients currently, in most cases due to COVID gathering restrictions. Did you get any answers from city officials where those kicked out of the parks were supposed to go?
Not really. The official line that I keep on getting is that they're being told to connect to local service providers. But the fact is, and everybody knows it, that local service providers have no resources to accommodate housing at this moment. Because of COVID, tourist shelter, which is not a low barrier shelter anyways, I mean, becoming a guest at the tourist shelter isn't as simple as some people make it sound, like you just show up and they give you a bed, which makes it an issue for people who are, you know, the hardest to address in the homeless community, which are people who with mental illness or addiction problems. So a lot of them are, you know, the tourist shelter, even on the best possible day, is not an available resource for them. Safe space, which is usually everybody's go-to being a low barrier shelter, hasn't been able to open this season due to bureaucracy that we spoke about last week about sprinklers, which is allegedly loosening up. But I mean, here we are, it's mid-January. Temperatures have been below freezing for weeks. It seems like whatever movement is going to happen, well, not too little too late. I don't want to say that because it's all necessary. And especially with these encampments being broken up, people need a place to go immediately.
Do you have any idea about in the camps that they addressed this week being the ones near Horseshoes, the Horseshoe Pits in Lower Park, as well as the area along the entrance to Bidwell Park, how the numbers of people that were displaced by this?
It's hard to say numbers. I did get from the city that 44 notices were issued. It's unclear if that was to each camp or if they had to be delivered, you know, to people. But I mean, a lot of these encampments have several more people than that living in them. On Monday, I was out there and there was several dozen people still camped out, a lot of them, again, breaking down camps that day. And a lot of them were gone by the time I was there Tuesday. I asked one gentleman if people had been moving, and he said, oh, yeah. He said, hella people. And actually he said, yeah. before the notices were issued on Thursday, you said there was twice as many people as there were there Monday, which on Monday there was still, at least two dozen tents that I'd see. Not everybody was just displaced yesterday. They've been, you can actually even see some growth at the other encampments over the weekend as people were scrambling to get away. A lot of homeless people, campers that I spoke to, a regular thing in talking to the homeless is a lot of people don't want to be identified for various reasons. A lot of them not through the virtue of really being criminals, but through the virtue of living homeless, which is in itself criminalized, have legal issues as far as warrants. A lot of them for camping tickets, ironically, or other minor tickets that are generally directed at the homeless. And you have a lot of people who are really fearful of having any police contact. So they're stuck between, I have warrants for having my dog off a leash or smoking in the plaza. So if I'm here when the cops show up, I'm going to jail. Although I didn't actually personally see any arrests happen, and I haven't had a chance to follow up with CPD yet, if any actual arrests were made yesterday. But I mean, I'd say it's highly probable that no matter what happened yesterday, in the upcoming weeks, we're going to see spikes in those as enforcement continues. And as people have nowhere to go where camping is legal.
All right. Thanks, Ken.
Yeah, man. Right on.
For more on this story, look up Ken Smith's Sweeps Begin feature in this week's print edition of the CNR or online at chico.newsreview.com. For those of you just joining us, you're listening to the Chico News and Review Show on KZFR 90.1 FM. In the print edition of the CNR that came out today, I wrote my first Arts Devo column in over a month. I took some time off, as I usually do around the often mellow weeks at this time of year, but the holiday season was anything but mellow in America. But I've decided for now to save my words on all that for another day out of respect for those connected to the local arts and music scene who passed away during the holidays. From 1995 into the early 2000s, there was probably no band in Chico, doing original music at least, that played as many local shows as the Imps. Thinking back to those days and the countless, usually packed, beer-fueled rave-ups at Duffy's Tavern, it feels like the high-energy power trio's music was the soundtrack of the times for downtown's family of hipsters, rockers, drunks, and assorted freaks. The fire in the band's belly was John McCall, and on December 20th, the relentless frontman finally burned out. He died in his Chico home at the age of 49. For years, McCall was the well-known manager of Woodstock's Pizza downtown before going into a business for himself with the amazing and criminally short-lived McCall's Barbecue in South Chico. I know I'm joined by many local rockers and tons of co-workers over the years in mourning the loss of one of this town's iconic characters. Tune in to the Imps Bandcamp page at theimps.bandcamp.com. Cue up the perfect song, Hill of Beans. That's the song that's been playing between segments on today's show. And raise a glass to the man. And tomorrow, January 15th at 1 p.m., a masked social distance memorial service for McCall will be held at Chico Cemetery. There will already also be a virtual version of it. Look up the Imps band on Facebook to find out more information. Also around the scene back in the day was the Mean Girl, the hilarious, wicked smart, and definitely mean at times, in print at least, columnist for the Synthesis newspaper, Nicole Seredson. On November 29th, Seredson died in Chico. She was 45. No memorial has been announced as of press time. And on January 2nd, local thespian John Fuller passed away. He was 69. According to a family post on his Facebook page, Fuller died due to complications related to COVID-19. His last local performance was in the musical Jesus Christ Superstar at Chico Theater Company in March. A memorial service was held on January 10th at East Avenue Church. So what's going on this week? Get out your pocket robots and get ready to input the highlights from the local calendar. Butte County Restaurant Week is this week. It starts next week, January 22nd to the 31st. 8 downtown Chico restaurants are taking part. They all have special prices for special menus. Participants include Celestino's, the downtown location, Crush, Goji's Cafe, LaSalle's, Ohm Foods, Panama Bar and Cafe, The Raw Bar, Sicilian Cafe, and Woodstock's Pizza. Find out more at explorebuttecounty.com/restaurant-week. For this year's Martin Luther King Day celebration, it's going to be virtual. No gathering this year because of COVID restrictions. The virtual MLK Day celebration will feature a live streaming of musical selections, interviews, dance, and performance art, all in celebration of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. It's free, but donations can be made to the North State Equity Fund, norcalunitedway.org/north-state-equity-fund. You can find out more on Facebook. Look up Virtual MLK Day Celebration or watch the broadcast on January 18th from 2 to 4 p.m. on BCAC TV, Comcast Channel 11, as well as online at youtube.com/BCACTV. And over the 1078 gallery, they have a group show going on. It's all virtual. Stories 9, with 8 artists with strong ties to Chico telling their stories through art and photography. It features John Baca, Sharon DeMeyer, Josh Oliveira, Lauren Ruth, Jason Clower, Sherry Simons, Judith Lanen, and Marilyn Walsh. Like we said, the 1078 is currently closed due to COVID-19, but you can see the show online at 1078gallery.org. That's the numbers, 1078gallery.org, where you can also watch videos with the artists talking about their works. Lauren Ruth and Jason Clower have a collaborative installation in the show. Here is a snippet of them talking about their work.
Hi, I'm Lauren Ruth.
And I'm Jason Clower.
And together we're the Camaflores.
We've been working a lot with the I Ching, a Chinese oracular text that's a lot like Western tarot. People use it for divination or telling the future.
In this work, we were trying to respond to the particular situation of being unable to come into the gallery to view the work.
This is what art professionals like me call a site-specific installation.
This hexagram is called Swoon Decrease. It tells you it would help to cut down on wine. It even says, if three people go out together, one will be lost. Also, sickness will diminish.
This piece is made out of wall vinyl, actually 70 linear feet of wall vinyl, and it's cut using a vinyl cutter and then applied to the wall like a giant sticker.
It's a lot like hanging wallpaper horizontally with laser-like precision. I'd also like to point out that the I Ching specifically says that if you come to the show, you are a person of great character.
Chico News and Review is made possible by the generous contributions of KZFR supporters and by the law firm of Peters, Habib, McKenna, Jewel Rhodes, and Cardosa LLP, specializing in civil litigation and criminal defense, with an emphasis on personal injury and real estate litigation. Serving the community for over 100 years, the law firm of Peters, Habib, McKenna, Jewel Rhodes, and Cardosa LLP is located at 414 Salem Street in downtown Chico. Their phone is 342-3593. And by Northern Star Mills, serving the North Valley with farm, garden, and pet supplies since 1898. Northern Star Mills offers natural and organic soil amendments and fertilizers, as well as natural and holistic pet supplies. Northern Star Mills is located in downtown Chico across from Bidwell Mansion. Hey, thanks again for tuning in to the Chico News and Review Show. Thank you to KZFR 90.1 FM for hosting us each Thursday at 5:30 p.m. And of course, thank you to Cat Depot for our theme music that opens and closes the show. And remember, look for the latest print edition of the CNR on stands now. Take care. It's Thursday, time for the Chico News and Review, local news and arts from Butte County's community newspaper on the radio. Hey there, Butte County. Jason Cassidy here, interim editor of the Chico News and Review. Thanks so much for tuning in to the Chico News and Review every Thursday, 5:30 p.m., right after the Butte Report with Sue Hildebrand here on KZFR 90.1 FM and KZFR.org. It's new issue day. The CNR is still putting out a print edition just once a month, in addition to publishing online at chico.newsreview.com. And the January paper is now on the racks all over Butte County. This is the paper's annual Whom to Watch issue, wherein we profile a handful of local leaders and community members likely to be in the news in the coming year. On today's show, we're going to talk to writer Ken Smith about big developments this week on the homeless encampment front. But first, a few news briefs. Butte County District Attorney Mike.
Hi, this is Gail Kimball. You're listening to Ask Dr. Gail. And this is FM 90.1 KZFR Chico, listener-supported community radio for the Sacramento Valley, the foothills, and beyond. Just so you know, the opinions voiced on this program don't necessarily represent the views or opinions of KZFR, its staff, board of directors, underwriters, or volunteers. And that's why I love KZFR, because it's mostly run by volunteers like me. And we need to give credit to underwriters. Ask Dr. Gail is made possible by the generous contributions of KZFR supporters and by Friends of the Arts, your state local partner to the California Arts Council since 2001. Friends of the Arts creates economic opportunity by producing and supporting events and by publishing a bi-monthly arts and culture newsletter. To stay in the know or have your event listed, visit friendsof.art. Ask Dr. Gale is also made possible by Dalmier Insurance Agency, an independent agent and retail broker since 1948. Wow. Dalmier Insurance provides a range of coverage options, from home and auto insurance to farm.